Welcome to Heartline. I'm Rita Schulte, a licensed therapist in the Northern Virginia, D.C. area, and I'm passionate about matters of the heart. I want to check the pulse on your heart by taking a look at some of the cutting-edge issues that are affecting you and the people around you, and have you consider, how in the world is all this mess called life affecting your heart? To help stir things up, we're going to be talking to some of the leading professionals in the Christian counseling and literary industry, as well as hosting discussions with real people who are struggling with real-life issues. If you want to know a little bit about me, check me out at ritaschulte.com. That's S-C-H-U-L-T-E.com, where you can ask questions, find out about my book, listen to other podcasts, or request to be a guest on the show. You can also find me on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC or follow me on Twitter at Heartline Pod. So let's get going on this journey of the heart. Dr. Gary Oliver is a psychologist, author, executive director of the Center for Relationship Enrichment, and professor of psychology and theology at John Brown University. He's founded, developed, and directed several counseling centers. He served on the executive board and the national speaking team of Promise Keepers and is currently on the executive board of the American Association of Christian Counselors. Dr. Oliver has authored or co-authored over 20 books. His story begins 25 years ago when he found out he had cancer, but he had no idea of the difficulties that lied ahead. His story will amaze and inspire you. Dr. Oliver, welcome to Heartline.
Well, thanks. It's a joy to be with you.
You have an incredible story. It's a story about walking through the dark night of the soul, but gleaning some powerful truths that you say have actually enriched your life. I haven't had too many people on the show who've experienced as much loss and suffering as you have. And it started about 25 years ago when you first found out you had cancer. Can you start us out there?
Yeah, I was just kind of going through life, and I had a soreness on my tongue. So I went and saw my ENT physician, and they said there was nothing to be concerned about. And I came back about 4 months later, and they said not to worry about it. And so finally I called a friend of mine who was an ENT physician in Nebraska. And I was up there for Easter, and he biopsied it and came back stage 1 squamous cell carcinoma. So they did the surgery, and for 9 years later, there was no reoccurrence. And then it came back, and subsequently it's come back 6 times. So I've had cancer 7 times and 6 cancer surgeries.
Wow. So usually people are home free after 5 years. Do they know what was the deal with that? I mean, 9 years, that's a long time.
No, I wasn't a smoker. I wasn't a drinker. I
really?
Exercised. I stayed in great health. So sometimes there are folks who just, for some reason, perhaps something genetic, but the cancer kept on coming back. And, you know, obviously cancer is not fun. But quite frankly, God has used cancer in my life to help me understand him better, to open doors to understand others. And while I wish I'd never had cancer, I would wish it on no one, it's been a unique occasion for me to understand Romans 8:28, how God can cause all things to work together for good. Not all things are good. You know, it doesn't say that. But God can cause all things or bring good out of all things, including cancer.
Mm. That's powerful, Gary. I mean, for somebody who's been through the amount of suffering and pain you have, you had 6 surgeries. And the last surgery that you had, didn't they remove like 80% of your tongue?
Yeah, I went in the 6th time. I went in for what I thought was going to be, you know, another surgery. Not that you ever get used to it, but, you know, your 6th time around. But when I woke up, I found out that I had been on the ventilator for 2 days, that they had taken 10 and a half hours, removed my lower right-hand jaw, 80% of my tongue, and they took skin off my legs and put it in my mouth to kind of give me some muscle there. But I only have 20% of my tongue. The other 80% is muscle from my leg. And so I, you know, I figure out, you know, some people, they kind of say things they'd have a foot in their mouth while I have my whole leg in my mouth. I mean, when I run off at the mouth, I run off at the mouth.
Literally.
It's very embarrassing.
Okay, so I can't believe you could even laugh about it. But you went in for these routine surgeries. Was it the same place all the time?
Yeah. Same place, time, and one or two times I had chemotherapy. I had radiation. Each time they thought they'd gotten it. After my sixth surgery, as I was recovering, teaching myself how to speak, because they said I'd never speak again. They said that someday your wife might understand a few sentences, but you'll never be a public speaker.
And that's your livelihood.
But I decided I wasn't going to accept that.
Yeah.
So I'm in recovery. I'm getting my strength back. I'm learning how to walk again because of the damage done to my legs because of the surgery. When I went down to MD Anderson, and they found two large, massive tumors in my throat that were inoperable, and they were stage 4, and without some chemotherapy, I may have 3 months to live. So they gave me an experimental chemo, and by God's grace, 3 months later, those two tumors had disappeared. So I went through some more chemotherapy, which kind of knocked me out for a good 6 to 9 months. It was pretty massive. But I've been, cancer-free since then. I go down to MD Anderson every 3 or 4 months and have another checkup and find out what's happening.
How were you dealing with all of this? This wasn't just like, okay, I'm going to get some chemo and get a little nausea medicine. You were really walking through some powerful stuff here.
Oh, it was dark. Well, and to put this in context, in 2005, I had, I think, my third cancer surgery. In early 2005, my dad had been sick for a while, and my dad died. After burying him, about 4 months later, my first wife, Carrie, who I was married to for 27 years, Carrie was diagnosed with metastatic pancreatic cancer, inoperable, and given maybe 3 months to live. Well, by God's grace, she lived over 2 years. We had trip after trip to MD Anderson, chemotherapy, all kinds of procedures, and kind of watching her body waste away for 2 years. My wife had been spunky and healthy and athletic. During that time, I had cancer again. In 2007, my middle son, Matt, died. 2 months after Matt died, my wife, Carrie, went to be with the Lord. And then a year later, my only sibling, Marcia, went to be with the Lord. So in 4 years, I buried my dad, my first wife of 27 years, my middle son, and my only sibling, my sister. So that's going on, along with this ongoing cancer saga. So I got hammered pretty good.
How were you dealing with this? How did your wife's diagnosis of cancer affect you?
Oh gosh, I was devastated. I mean, she'd been healthy, strong, spirited, spunky, athletic, exercised, and that came out of left field. And of course, that came about 3 months after my dad's funeral. And I was down. I was discouraged. Obviously, I was weary from caring for my dad and taking him in and out of hospitals, and then his death and my recovering from a surgery earlier that year. But the amazing thing is that in the midst of the loss, the weariness, the heartache, the exhaustion, the wondering what the heck is going on, the verses that I had memorized as a boy, the songs that I had learned in church, the words of hymns, those came back to me. And in the midst of darkness and discouragement, I experienced God's presence. I was aware that I wasn't alone. I was aware that things probably were not magically going to get better. But God kind of laid it on my heart to do a message on joy. And I'm thinking,
you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah. I mean, really? I mean, God really do a message on joy? I mean,
well, you weren't angry at God?
you know, I never got angry at God, and I think part of that may be because, you know, I've been a clinical psychologist for 35 years, but before I got my PhD in psychology, I mean, I also have an MDiv from Talbot Seminary and a THM from Fuller Seminary, so I was first trained as a theologian and then as a psychologist, and so I've walked with many people through dark, dark, deep valleys of loss and trauma and grief and failure and discouragement. And so along the way through helping others, I was very aware of what God could do. I was very aware of his promises. And so I never got angry at God because I knew God was sovereign. And sometimes that's just an abstract, arcane, theological construct. But at the end of the day, I mean, that makes a big difference. In fact, some of our listeners may know who Howard Hendricks is. Well, actually, he recently died and went to be with the Lord. But Dr. Howard Hendricks taught at Dallas Seminary, and he mentored Chuck Swindoll and Tony Evans and so many great leaders today. Well, after my third diagnosis of cancer, I was at a Promise Keepers board meeting. I was on the board of Promise Keepers for 10 years and spoke nationally with them. After Coach Mack told the board of my upcoming surgery and they laid hands on me and prayed for me, Howie turned over, he was sitting next to me at the table, and put his hands on my knee. And he had just gone through a long surgery for skin cancer. And he said, you know, Gary, when they were taking me into the operating room, it's like I heard God say, Hendricks, your whole life you've told people I'm sovereign. Well, either I am or I'm not. And he said, I went under the anesthesia thanking God that he was sovereign and I could trust him. And I never forget what Dr. Hendricks told me that day. That God is sovereign, and I believe that. I've taught that. And so if that's true, I may not be able to figure everything out, but he doesn't make mistakes. Mm. You know? So I was aware of the fact that for some reason God was allowing this, and my job was to try to understand and to reflect him. And so I started to do some research on joy, and I found out that the Bible has a ton to say about joy. The words joy, joyous, joyful are mentioned hundreds of times in Scripture. That one of God's greatest concerns for his children is that we experience joy. And the deal is that it's not just joy when everything's going well. It's not a joy that's dependent on circumstances. But we can even have joy in the midst of the darkest, most difficult time. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, well, that's because you trusted God. But you had a concept of God that was good. A lot of people don't have that, especially when they go through things. It's one thing for you to suffer personally, but to lose like your wife and a son, a lot of people really don't get out of that. You know, their beliefs about God totally change. How did you keep that anger?
Well, and I've seen folks who 5-10 years after loss are still bitter and empty.
Yes.
Because of that. You know, it sounds pretty simple, but we had a song that I heard growing up hundreds of times, Count Your Blessings, name them one by one. And I found that I had a choice. I could focus on the loss. I could focus on what I couldn't change, and I could let that define me. Or I could choose to focus on what I could change and what still was. And so I begin to count my blessings. And there's another old hymn, Turn Your Eyes Upon Jesus. I begin to thank God for his son, for what he did for me, for his sacrifice. I thank God for the health I had. I thank God for the family that I had. I thank God for the memories. And I realize that we don't have to let what happens to us define us. We don't have to let our circumstances determine our reality. And that was one of you know, the many big lessons that God gave me.
Well, you said there were many dark days when you had to remind yourself that your feelings weren't facts. So were there days when you were just depressed or were you afraid?
Oh, goodness. Yeah, I mean, there were days on end, weeks when I was weary. I remember when after chemo, I could barely walk from my bed to the couch. I couldn't even walk out to my mailbox out front to get the mail. I was so weak. I remember when I couldn't talk, and I had to write notes, and I was told I probably never talked again, or when I probably have a feeding tube the rest of my life. Oh, goodness, there were very dark days. After my son Matt died, I had an ache that I can't describe.
How did he die, like, Gary?
Pardon?
How did he die?
He died. He took his own life.
Oh my gosh! I'm so sorry.
He struggled with drugs and alcohol, and he had turned some corners. He was sober and he was ready to graduate from school. But he had struggled for most of his teenage years. He was 23. He had struggled with doubt, tremendous spiritual warfare, and had gotten involved with prescription drugs and alcohol. And he had ADHD. He had horrific allergies. He had so much that he battled. And he was turning the corner and doing a great job. And apparently one night he got down and got discouraged, and you know, the great thing is that about 3 days before he died, I saw him and went to where he worked and bought him some ice cream, and we chatted and hugged, and he would always kiss me on the cheek and say, "I love you, Dad," and the last time I saw him, we had been kissed and expressed our love. And then the night before he died, we had a great phone conversation. And things were going great. But with someone who is depressed, who has suicidal tendencies, the fact that it seems like they're getting better does not mean that they're out of the woods yet.
Yeah. You just saw Rick Warren's son.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Same thing.
And there have been a number of others.
Yes, there have.
So, of course, that was a devastating shock, and I was trying to help my wife, Carrie, stay alive. She was, unbeknownst to me at that time, she was 2 months away from her death, and, you know, I cried tears until there were no tears to cry, but I was still crying. I couldn't eat. I couldn't sleep. I felt like I'd been punched in the stomach over and over. I wondered where God was. I felt all that. You know, I wasn't having a good time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, who would? I mean, did you ever feel hopeless?
Oh yeah. But you know what? I mean, with God's help, I chose not to stay there. And Rita, it really is. I mean, it's not that I'm a strong person. I'm a stubborn person. But I chose not to stay there. I mean, when something happens to us, we can either allow the circumstance to determine our reality, okay? And we can focus on the problem and let the problem obscure everything else. Or we can choose to put the problem in light of the bigger picture. And for me, what happens to me, it's not nearly as important as what Christ did for me. And the circumstances of life don't have to determine our reality. And I realized that because of my cancers, as Matt died and recovering from that and Carrie's death, those certainly redefined my life. I'm a different person because of that. I miss them every day. I just... last week had the 6th anniversary of Matt's passing. Mm-hmm. And I shed some tears, but also I laughed. And I remembered his smile and his jokes. I remember our last embrace. I remember that the last words I heard him say were, "I love you, Dad." And that doesn't take away the loss.
No.
But I choose to look in light of what was, not what never will be.
Yeah, you said something where you spoke at a church that I wrote down. Joy, choosing joy doesn't eliminate sorrow. Choosing joy isn't ignoring pain. It involves choosing faith focus over fear focus, choosing a promise focus over a problem focus. And I love that.
You know, I don't want to sound trite or glib, but after 6 cancer surgeries and 7 diagnoses of cancer and burying 4 loved ones in 4 years, I think I have a position to say some things and make some observations. And I've not ignored pain. I've not denied pain. I live with the losses of my life every single day. It's like having a part of you amputated, but it's inside of you so nobody can see it. And so on the outside, you look fine. But on the inside, the losses of your life make a very real difference. And at the same time, they don't have to determine our present or our future. They don't have to determine how we respond. And so in the midst of this darkness, I say, well, God, either you're sovereign or you're not. Either I can trust him or I can't. Either he's just a promise maker or he's also a promise keeper. And as I counted my blessings, as I chose to Colossians, was it 3:1-2, set your mind on, no, I'm sorry, Ephesians 5:1-2, set your mind on things above, not on things on earth. As I choose to claim the promises, what I found was in the midst of the tears, in the midst of the darkness, I had this almost inexplicable sense of God's presence and even a joy. And that led to one of my biggest ahas, and this was great. I realized that for those who don't know Christ, you're either sad or happy. You can't have joy and sorrow at the same time. Because secular happiness depends on good things happening, okay? If good things happen to happen, then I'm happy. Joy doesn't work that way. As Christians, I can have sorrow and at the same time have a joy in the sense that God is good, that I can trust him, that he keeps his word, that I know I didn't lose my dad or my son or my wife or my sister. I know where they're at.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I have lost them. They aren't here now. And that makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah. How do you see God's promises differently through this battle?
Oh, I've had some good friends when Kira died. They had a test of faith because of how many friends had prayed for them. And I had one friend who fasted for a week. I had many friends who fasted a day, a month, in prayer for Carrie and our family. And I had some friends who wondered why I wasn't angry or if I was bitter towards God or resentful or, you know, I mean, it's like God was dogpiling calamity on me and on our family. And just the opposite happened. I have come out of this, and I still am, with a stronger hope, a stronger faith. I'm much more aware of God's goodness, of God's grace, of God's mercy. I'm aware that he is not just a promise maker, but a promise keeper, that all of his promises are true. I'm aware that circumstances don't determine reality, that I can have joy even in the midst of trials, even in the midst of sorrows, and that doesn't involve denying my problems. You know, I work with so many believers who deny their problems and kind of fake it and say things are good when they're not. Christ didn't die and rise again for us to fake it. So I found that you can experience the greatest depth of loss, of grief, of darkness, and at the same time have what I call a sovereign joy.
Mm. Okay, so how about the person listening who says, well, that's great for you, Gary. You know, you're a theologian. You know, you've got this great, strong relationship with God. You know, where do I start? You know, because I am angry and bitter at God. What do you do with that?
Well, I think it starts in many ways. And, And, you know, by the way, because I'm a theologian and a psychologist, there are a lot of folks I've worked with, pastors, seminary professors, missionaries who serve the Lord all their lives. And when devastation hit, it knocked them for a loop. And some it took years to recover.
Yeah.
And so sometimes, because you know how to help others, does not mean you know how to apply it in your own life.
Amen.
And so, you know, James talks about don't just be hearers, but be doers of the word. And it started out for me with, you know, what can I believe? What can I trust? What do I know about God? Okay? Regardless of what happens, regardless of my circumstances, what do I know about God? In the past, have I found him trustworthy? Have I found him good? Have I found him faithful? And so if so, then what's the next step? If I choose to get mad at God and blame God, that just kind of sets the hole deeper. So for me, I would say start by, in fact, I talked about this in one of my messages, start by choosing to set your mind on things above, okay? How have you experienced God overall? Who have you known God to be in your life?
How he's shown up for you in other times of your life during loss
exactly.
or suffering.
Exactly. And then, number two, don't ignore the problem, but choose to count your blessings and be thankful, okay? I mean, what do you have to be thankful for? And goodness, I thought, Lisa, of all the things in my life that I've never given thanks for. I can see, I can hear, I can walk. I've always had clothes to wear. I've always had food to eat. I've always had a roof over my head. I have friends. You realize how important those things are, and all the things we take for granted and never, ever, ever are thankful for.
Join us next time as we continue our conversation with Dr. Gary Oliver on how to experience profound joy in the midst of suffering. Thanks for joining me today. If you have a question or comment, or you'd like to be a guest on Heartline, I'd love to hear from you. You can contact me at ritaschulte.com, on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC, or Twitter at Heartline Pod. And remember, it's your heart. Keep it alive. Check the pulse.